This is 5 o'clock shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network, originating at WBAI. I'm Robert Knight in New York, and in today's program, we'll be looking at the conservative underpinning of the passage of laws related to Stand Your Ground across the country, not only in Florida, where today we commemorate the passing of the first month since the murder of Trayvon Martin. We'll be speaking about the way the right wing is passing laws on behalf of the National Rifle Association. Also today, we will be speaking live with the Reverend Dr. Jackie Lewis of the Middle Collegiate Church in New York's Lower East Side, who preached about Trayvon Martin overnight from the pulpit in a hoodie. All of that coming up. This is 5 o'clock shadow.
I think what's happened is that black people, white people, Asians, Latinos, Native Americans, all of us have just gotten tired of this. And it's sort of like one human family saying in one cry, we're not going to have this on our watch. We are really ready for racism to be a past tense topic.
And Zimmerman is claiming self-defense.
I know he is. And Trayvon is so skinny that his friends call him Slim. So I'm wondering what might have happened that would have made force so deadly to be fired. I can't imagine. And again, I'm not a lawyer. I'm a pastor. And as a pastor, I'm saying these instances to me mean we're not post-race in America. We still have some work to do around reconciliation and healing. And I think the energy around this is saying that I'm not the only one who believes that we have some work to do.
There's also an online community.
Yes, there is. Here's what we're hoping will happen today. First of all, wherever you are, put your hoodie on and maybe have your friends make a mugshot card that says, I'm not dangerous, racism is. Post it everywhere you can. Secondly, send a bag of Skittles to the Sanford Police Department and let's see if we can send a message there to do something more about this. Third, and perhaps most importantly, let's call the president's office, let's call the state attorney who has now got this case in his hands, and let's really pressure them to get an arrest on George Zimmerman. Look at what social networking and the pressure has done. We don't know Romari's name, but we do know Trayvon's. And I think this wonderful grassroots movement has got everybody understanding that there's a little something we can do to make a difference in the world.
What does the hoodie represent?
The hoodie represents an urban signal. This hoodie, my hoodie, that I wear when I'm running in the rain, when my hair is covered, my black face, maybe I look like someone to be frightened of. But a hoodie should not allow for profiling to happen. And that's what it's about. We're standing in solidarity with Trayvon. All of the countless names, black young children, who, when seen in hoodies, are thought to be dangerous.
And the Skittles.
And the Skittles. The Skittles are Trayvon was with a cell phone. He had a soft drink and a bag of Skittles in his hand. And you can hear on the 9/11 tapes that made George Zimmerman feel threatened. A bag of candy? A soft drink? No, it's this symbol that makes too many people in our country feel afraid of our young black men.
Why has Trayvon put a face on racism and not for Marley?
I think it's because maybe that's an accumulative effect. This is old news. This is Emmett Till in Mississippi being lynched because he whistled at a white woman. This is countless young black men being frisked and seized, men shot on the New Jersey Turnpike 10 years ago just for being black. Our young people know that breathing while being black, walking while being black, talking while being black, driving by being black, puts them at risk. There's a wonderful new movie made called Woke Up Black, in which a filmmaker talked to six urban teens in Chicago, and she called it Woke Up Black because one of the teens said, I can just be walking around minding my business, and people around me will assume I'm a gangbanger or a drug dealer. I guess my crime is I woke up black. I'm hoping that faithful people all around the country will stand up and say, we're not having that for our babies. These are our babies.
New information coming out of Orlando this evening in that case now generating outrage across this country.
Brewing nationwide outrage over the shooting death of an unarmed Florida teen shot and killed by a community watch member. After enormous public outcry, police released the 911 tapes this weekend. The tapes raising new questions about that tragic night and why the shooter has not been charged.
Another black teen murdered in cold blood. With no justice, I know it's cold blood. Ain't nobody standing up for us. It's time for us to stand up for us. I ain't talking about reacting in violence. And I ain't talking about just sitting in silence. We gotta pull our resources together. They gotta see us standing strong together. The Martin family can't stand alone. 40 million strong is the reason I wrote this song. This is spark a new beginning for blacks. Trayvon won't die in vain, now that's a fact. And this killer will not go free, cause we gon' legally disturb your peace. We can't afford another Rodney King, cause ain't nothing changed since Rodney King.
We want justice, 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 justice. We want justice, 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 justice. For Trayvon, for Trayvon.
Yeah, the truth is you don't know what this is, so be still till you know what this is. I got a hunch they pushing for us to riot. See, when you're angry, it's hard to keep quiet. But don't buy it, keep your composure. Be wise, intelligent soldiers. These people are severely wicked and quite clever. These new laws are how you put away forever. And I ain't trying to sound racist, but they'd rather see us all dead or locked up. Not to mention this election year. Connect this with that and we got something to fear. But I can't really speak on that right now. What I'm really speaking about is justice right now. Another mother lost a son to this. Racism, two-bit tricks in politics.
We want justice, 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 justice. We want justice, 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 justice.
This is 5 O'Clock Shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network. I'm Robert Knight in New York. That is God's Will with a new song for Trayvon Martin. And we are now joined live by the pastor of the Middle Collegiate Church in the person of the Reverend Dr. Jackie Lewis. And Dr. Lewis did something very extraordinary, something that was repeated across the country in many different cities and states. She had her congregation gather in hoodies, as were described as being worn by Trayvon Martin during his final moments of life. And welcome to 5 O'Clock Shadow, Jackie, and congratulations on your ongoing work to keep the faith community in the social, racial, economic justice movement.
Thank you, Robert. I appreciate that. And thanks, everyone.
We heard a preview of your backstage moment before you gave your sermon yesterday.
Yes.
And I'd like you to tell us what you did and what happened and where it goes.
Sure. Well, as you said, Middle Collegiate Church stays connected to social justice issues. We really feel that it is part of our faith that just as important as our kind of personal spirituality and personal spiritual growth is the sense that we are all inextricably connected. And in fact, we say a lot here, we're not quote-unquote saved until everyone's saved. And that means we direct our energy toward economic justice, toward LGBTI and gender justice, and toward racial justice. In a multiracial, multicultural community, we think that's really important. So I was planning to preach on racial justice, this Sunday in March on the way to Easter from 6 months ago. And I began to do my research on sermons, and I looked up, old cases and connected to Emmett Till and looked at ongoing racial tensions in schools, and stop and frisk, et cetera. Then we had the Bromarley incident where the young man that was shot in the Bronx in his mother's bathroom in a kind of a marijuana bust, shot and killed. And that was the central narrative that I was going to use to make my sermon point. But then this Trayvon incident happened. And really from there, Robert, there was this organic sense in our congregation and my staff. One of our congregants wrote a new song, and someone wrote the music. And then, frankly, it was my husband who said, you should ask the congregation to wear, and then we almost said at the same time, hoodies. We just thought the symbol of the profiling would be such a powerful symbol. And we put it out on our social networking, and our congregation caught hold of it, and it caught fire, and and you can see that it was a powerful statement.
Is there also a holy network in which there is a coordination of churches and of other ministers and congregations stepping up like yours?
I think, you know, there certainly are pockets of holy networks all around the country. I would say that this thing happened organically, which as people of faith, we would say that's God's spirit. You know, I am actually friends with Gary and Emma Simpson up at Concord Baptist, but we didn't coordinate that. And there he was in a hoodie also. I think there was a church in Detroit area and some other places around that did this action, but it was kind of organic and grassroots and popped up. It popped up like a good idea pops up.
I've not felt this way about church since the days of the civil rights movement, when churches were organizing bases for protests and legislation and other forms of justice. How do you feel about this moment in history and that tradition?
Yeah, this is that kind of moment in time, Robert. And I think it's, you know, I've been saying that racism is like a virus that lies dormant in our collective human body, if you will. And then it mutates and then it comes back in a more virulent form. Mm. And I think we've had this kind of both dormant lying virus, but also a certain kind of apathy in congregational life. And right now, in these last few years, I think racism has both shown itself, the economy is so out of whack, there's such abject poverty for average Americans, the LGBTI thing has been so painful, that these kinds of societal ills, if you will, provoke good people to do good things. And I think congregations are understanding that as leaders of faith, it's our job to say, not on our watch, we're not going to have it.
Well, congratulations to both you and your husband, John, for being a part of this process. Can you take us into more detail about what is being recommended for your congregation to do? What actions are being taken specifically that might be emulated by others?
Sure. Thank you for that. First of all, regarding this case, we all know that we're not lawyers. I mean, we understand that we're not lawyers, and we may not know everything about this case. But what we do know is that a young man walking down the street in a hoodie was deemed to be suspicious. And that feels like it's about profiling. We're inviting people to continue to follow the case at hashtag Trevon Martin so you can see for yourself what's happening. Secondly, take a picture of a hoodie, yourself in it, with a sign underneath that says, I am not dangerous, racism is. Mm-hmm. I am not dangerous, racism is. And post that in your social networks to raise awareness about profiling. Three, Robert, I think that we as human beings need to be in relationship with people who are different than we are so we can really undermine that racist virus. I think when we build relationships across race and culture, we get to know each other and we can dismantle racism. So I would pray that every congregation in the country would begin to have a conversation about race. There's great tools out there. Peggy McIntosh has a big article about white privilege. Tim Wise's book is an excellent book. It'll help people to have a conversation about race. The Color Purple is a great novel that people can read to have a conversation about race. And each year we have a conference at Middle Church where we help people to learn how to grow multiracial congregations. This year's conference is April 21st, and people can find it on our website at middlechurch.org. Let's learn how to create communities that collaborate against racism.
Well, I thank you for that and your continuing work. And we are very honored to have you with us today on 5 o'clock Shadow, the Reverend Dr. Jackie Lewis, pastor of the Middle Collegiate Church on the Lower East Side in Manhattan in New York City. One other question, Jackie.
Sure.
What's the response to your hooded sermon been?
Well, we have the sermon's up online, and I hope people will listen to it. Had just an overwhelming response from media and kind people like you who want to tell a good story. I said in my sermon yesterday, Robert, that I think the real story is this congregation, a place of gigantic diversity, all pulling together toward the same kinds of foci. So great media coverage. Lots of people are trying to get involved. We've got tons of pictures coming in from people in hoodies. And I think we are part of the movement that's happening around the country. There's a rally tonight, I know. There's a march on Tuesday night. I think all around the country people are saying, we're really not going to stand idly by while we think about profiling and racism as an ongoing issue in our country. It applies to black folks, but, you know, people who are Muslim are profiled or who seem to be Muslim are profiled. And these kinds of injustices are just not acceptable anymore.
Thank you once again. The Reverend Dr. Jackie Lewis of the Middle Collegiate Church, middlechurch.org. This is 5 O'Clock Shadow. I'm Robert Knight in New York. And we note that Dr. Lewis and many other people have mentioned the case of Emmett Till as being one of the catalysts for a part of the civil rights movement. And that was also mentioned in our recent trip to the Occupy the Hoodie protest at Union Square Park, also mentioned by the Reverend Dr. Peter Heltzel. And here now, we take a moment to consider some new music about Trayvon and the history of Emmett Till in a very famous rendition that you will no doubt recognize. This is 5 O'Clock Shadow.
First of all, rest in peace, Trayvon Martin. Racism never ended, so I guess that's where it started. A simple trip to the store, that's where he walking. Became a target cause a hoodie and he dark skin. In his life like Dawkins cause an idiot that lost it. He running like a faucet, the system here is faucet. Hope he pays for the life he cost. Even though I didn't know him, it still hit hard to me. Because it could have been my brother, a friend or even me. And the picture's clear to me, racism still right here to see. Emmett Till, Sean Bell and me, refresh your memory. How about Rodney King, they beat him in the street. Casey Anthony kill a baby and they just let her free. Are y'all seeing what I see? Do y'all feel the same as me? Cause we lose a young brother over Skittles and iced tea. Dawg, they can't be serious, they must be delirious. To stick up for Zimmerman, that makes me furious. Now what's right is right, and what's wrong is wrong. If Zimmerman did right, he wouldn't be in the wrong. I tell you, the type of things I don't like. Because we all know what happened that night ain't right. Because if Zimmerman was black and Trayvon was white, Zimmerman be probably doing a bid for life. And that's just keeping it real. I got my freedom to speak, so I'ma speak how I feel. Said I'ma speak how I feel.
Peter Heltzel, I'm the Associate Professor of Theology at New York Theological Seminary and Assistant Minister of Evangelism at Park Avenue Christian Church. There was a lot of hurt in this country. The civil rights movement started because of Emmett Till's murder.
That's right.
And this murder of Trayvon has catalyzed the nation about violence against black and brown bodies.
That's right.
And we will not, in the faith community, tolerate police murdering our black and brown children. And we as white folks need to admit that there's white supremacy in the system that has to be dismantled if we're going to see justice come in this nation.
Falls down in Mississippi. Not so long ago, when the young boys from Chicago town walked in a southern door, this boy's fateful tragedy he should all remember well. The color of his skin was black, and his name was Emmett Till. Some men, they dragged him to a barn, and there they beat him up. They said they had a reason, but I disremember what. They tortured him and did some things too evil to repeat. There was screaming sounds inside the barn. There was laughing sounds out on the street. Then they rolled his body down a gulf amidst a blood-red rain, and they threw him in the waters wide to cease his screaming pain. The reason that they killed him there, and I'm sure it ain't no lie, 'cause he was born a black-skinned boy, he was born to die. And then to stop the United States of yelling for a trial, two brothers, they confessed that they had killed poor Emmett Till. But on the jury, there were men who had helped the brothers commit this awful crime. And so this trial was a mockery, but nobody seemed to mind. I saw the morning papers, but I could not bear to see the smiling brothers walking down the courthouse stairs. Oh, the jury found them innocent, and the brothers, they went free. While Emmett's body float the foam of a Jim Crow southern sea. If you can't speak out against this kind of thing, a crime that's so unjust, your eyes are filled with dead man's clay, and your ears must be filled with dust. Your arms and legs, they must be in shackles and chains, and your mind, it must cease to flow. For you to let our human race fall down so god-awful low. This song is just a reminder to remind your fellow man that this kind of thing still lives today, and that goes through Ku Klux Klan. But if all us folks that thinks alike, if we'd give all we could give, we could make this great land of ours a greater place to live.
The Death of Emmett Till, performed by one Robert Zimmerman, not the father of the killer of Trayvon Martin, Bob Dylan is the way that this Robert Zimmerman is better known. This is 5 O'Clock Shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network. I'm Robert Knight in New York. And now we go deeper into the climate of legislation that leads to incidents such as the Trayvon Martin killing. There was recently an expose published by PR Watch about the way that there is a cut and paste template exercised by right-wing think tanks to enact not only in Florida but elsewhere across the country similar laws that support the position of the National Rifle Association and encourage incidents that so often end up with tragic or fatal gunshot injuries. We're now joined live by Lisa Graves, the executive director and editor-in-chief of PRWatch.org. Lisa, thank you for coming on today. Now, people, including the Black Law Students Association at Florida A&M, are mobilizing in Florida against the so-called Stand Your Ground law. But even more alarming is that it is proliferating nationwide. Can you tell us how?
Sure. As we've documented on our ALEC expose, which is ALECEXPOSED, about the American Legislative Exchange Council, this bill is not just a random bill. The bill that is has raised all this controversy and the tragedy in Florida, but it's a bill that the NRA lobbyist took to a closed-door meeting of the American Legislative Exchange Council, where corporations and politicians voted. There was no press present. The public wasn't present. That was a meeting that was co-chaired by Walmart, one of the biggest sellers of guns and ammunition in the country. And that bill was unanimously approved by that ALEC task force of corporations and politicians. It was then ratified by the ALEC board. And since 2005, bills like the one in Florida that have made these sorts of shoot-first laws the law, those bills have been passing in a couple dozen states, over two dozen states in the country, and it's currently pending in a number of states right now.
The American Legislative Exchange Council has been operating like a submarine. It's been invisible to most citizens whose elected legislatures are basically following their high-potency advice. Can you tell us more about ALEC?
Sure. Well, so one of the things that has been most disturbing as we have examined ALEC and as we've been exposing ALEC, which is a project we started last summer, when a whistleblower came to us with over 800 bills that had been approved by corporations and politicians through ALEC. And those bills affect nearly every area of American life, including the rights if you are killed or injured by a corporation's greed or misconduct, including changes to the rules to make big tax breaks for some of the richest corporations and corporate CEOs in the country, as well as changes to individual rights, such as in this area in criminal justice and in immigration, and even changes to the voter rights. The voter ID bills that have been streaming across the country are ratified by ALEC. This is a very influential organization that describes itself as the largest group of state legislators in the country, when in fact over 98% of the $7 million budget of ALEC every year comes largely from corporations, corporate lobbyists, and other sources other than legislators. So it is a real corporate bill factory, and this is just one example of how ALEC operates.
The origin of the organization, I understand, is tied to the Heritage Foundation, which took a hands-on role in enacting much of the regressive legislation when Ronald Reagan came into office. Can you speak a bit about the genealogy of Sure. Heritage and ALEC and related entities?
Sure. In the early 1970s, when having Richard Nixon as president wasn't enough for some of the reactionary people on the far right in this country, as well as for some of the corporations, ALEC was born. It was created by Paul Weyrich, a longtime right-wing activist. It was also created by a number of other men that he worked with to try to find a way to marry these corporations with this sort of right-wing social and political agenda. Paul Weyrich helped co-found the Heritage Foundation, and he was quoted in a speech a couple of years later in which he talked about how It's not in their interest to have more people voting, because when more people vote, he and his people, and he was speaking to a group of white evangelical churchgoers at the time, he and his people, their influence diminishes. Weyrich has a long-standing history, before he passed away a couple of years ago, of having sort of racially exclusionary views. He was one of the fathers of ALEC. And I think that a lot of people have expressed concerns about these sorts of shoot first laws, because a lot of the people who are being killed are people of color.
One of the most striking articles about this is by your colleague Brendan Fisher, about how ALEC ratified NRA-conceived law that may protect Trayvon Martin's killer. I'm very much taken by the identical language that is in the Florida legislation and that which was proposed by this organization. Can you take us through that wording?
Well, sure. So I actually worked on the research on that and pulled those bills. And it's quite clear, at least from a number of sources at the time that the bill was passed in Florida, that this is a bill that was conceived of by the NRA's lobbyists. Marion Hammer was the former president of the NRA, the National Rifle Association, which is an enormously powerful group in Washington that spends a lot of money in elections punishing anyone who doesn't agree with it and helping its friends. It's not just like any other public interest organization. It's a group that pays its leader over $1 million a year for serving at the head of its nonprofit operations. But this bill in Florida was conceived of by the NRA's paid lobbyist. She was instrumental in pushing it through the Florida legislature. She apparently stared down legislators as they voted on the floor of the Florida House and Senate. In the legislature there, pardon me, and she was there at the bill signing, right, standing right over the shoulder of Jeb Bush as he signed this bill into law in 2005. In the midst of this, shortly after that, she went to this secret closed-door meeting in Texas of the ALEC Criminal Justice Task Force, where she presented this bill as the ideal bill, as a model bill that ALEC should embrace as a template for national changes in the law. And under longstanding U.S. law, people have had a right of self-defense, have always had a right of self-defense to defend themselves against someone who's attempting to kill them or seriously harm them. But you haven't had a freestanding right, in essence, to shoot first in the ways that are described under Florida law. And so this is a very reckless law that has then been passed by ALEC legislators, pushed by ALEC legislators, and passed by them in state after state across the country, without many people being aware of what was happening.
Do you have the relevant part about shoot first before you?
I believe I do. I have our article right here.
Yes, I'd like people to hear just what was insinuated, the DNA that was inserted into the legal organism.
Sure. So the Florida bill says a person who is not engaged in a person who's not engaged in unlawful activity and who's attacked in any other place, and that means other than your home, basically anywhere that they are in a state. So a person who is not engaged in any unlawful activity, who is attacked in any other place where he or she has a right to be, has no duty to retreat and has the right to stand his or her ground and meet force with force, including deadly force, if he or she reasonably believes it necessary to do so, to prevent death or great bodily harm to himself or herself, or to another, or to prevent the commission of a forcible felony, which means potentially like a property crime.
Well,
the bill that is the ALEC model is basically word for word the same.
Well, the idea of including deadly force, that sounds like it is intended for those who possess deadly force, and it seems to abrogate or nullify what I believe to be a historical tradition of proportionality of response.
Well, that's right. I mean, when I look at this language, what I see is it says meet force with force, comma, including deadly force. It does not require that the other person be using deadly force on its terms. And as you point out, and as your listeners may be well aware, a longstanding part of American law has been that you cannot, you know, you can't shoot someone down with a gun when just because you're having a fist fight with them. Laws like this may make it possible for people to use deadly force when the other person is unarmed. And in fact, it may make it, it may in some ways make it likely for these results where the unarmed person ends up dead.
In the operation of this clandestine legislative engine known as ALEC, I'm wondering if partisanship has any relevance to this debate. I do not believe that only Republicans vote for these laws.
Well, it is the case that the law in Florida passed with a substantial number of Republicans, but also some Democrats. There were a handful of Democrats who stood up to the NRA and did not pass this bill, did not vote for it. And so in many states where it has passed, it has passed on large Republican majorities, if not unanimous Republican majorities, and some Democrats going along with those bills. As for ALEC, ALEC describes itself as a bipartisan group of legislators, and it is. However, when we took a snapshot of its leadership last summer in August of 2011 and looked at all 104 people who are legislators who were in ALEC leadership roles, either on these task forces or as the leader of ALEC in the state, it was 103 Republicans and one Democrat.
We're speaking with Lisa Graves, Executive Director of PR Watch, prwatch.org, and one of the great observers of the clandestine legislation that is highly funded and fueled by reactionary concerns. And Lisa, I'm taken by something that you have reiterated a number of times, and that is that this organization and the posse they represent tend to force forward legislation that has disproportionately negative effects on communities of color and poverty. Can you elaborate about not just this bill, but other things that are being done that basically support the 1%?
Well, I think that there are a number of bills. There are a number of bills that really do give great advantage to the richest people in this country, and certainly the ALEC approach to changes to our tax law to starve the government, to starve the government's ability to provide basic services while giving tax breaks to some of the richest people in the country, let alone the world, is a key part of their effort. And they've also worked for a number of years on supporting and in essence advancing bills to privatize public safety net programs, including Social Security, including Medicare and Medicaid, the programs that deal with people's health and access to health care if you're poor and if you're elderly. So they have a wide-ranging privatization agenda that works to take your tax dollars out of public institutions and out of public programs and put those tax dollars in the hands of for-profit private corporations. So basically provide a steady stream of income for corporations. This agenda is most apparent, perhaps, in the area of prisons and schools, where ALEC has been a staunch and strong and far-reaching sort of supporter of efforts to privatize prisons, put those prisons into the hands of prison corporations that didn't exist until about 25 years ago. There wasn't even such things really in this country as this multi-billion-dollar private prison industry until a number of ALEC legislators pushed through bills to privatize state prisons. Those private prison companies have expanded their reach into private immigration detention facilities. And as people who are your listeners and people across the world know, America has the largest prison population in the world, and a significant number of those prisoners are people of color. In addition, ALEC has pushed for the privatization of public schools, pushed to remove tax dollars from the public school system and put that money into private school corporations. And in fact, the ALEC Task Force on Education is chaired by an online school corporation.
Are there other pieces of legislation that are being pushed through by ALEC that harmfully affect people of color, Latinos, and or immigrants, women, or others?
Well, it is the case that ALEC ratified the reactionary bill out of Arizona that was originally sponsored, or pieces of it that were originally sponsored by State Senator Russell Pierce, who was notoriously connected with anti-immigrant fervor and some, you know, supremacist groups. Russell Pierce was recalled from office last year, but not before his bill, SB 1070, became the law in Arizona. That extremely controversial bill was ratified by ALEC as a model bill for immigration, and since then it has been introduced in other states in the country, including in Alabama. So we know that that those sorts of bills have been pursued through ALEC and have been given the imprimatur of ALEC. And ALEC is not just a nonprofit organization. It's also really a body of corporations that are underwriting these operations. And so on our site, PR Watch, we have worked to help document who those corporations are. On ALEC Exposed, we have links to show those corporations, including Walmart, including companies like Coke Industries, including Coca-Cola. In the case of Walmart, I would point out as well, when Walmart was the chair of the ALEC Criminal Justice Task Force, it not only approved of the bill, the Stand Your Ground Law bills, but it also pushed through a number of bills to increase the prison sentence for people involved in petty retail theft. And I think statistically, the case is that the number of people who are impacted by that bill are poor people, people who are acting in desperate circumstances and engage in retail theft, and those sentences have been increased due to Walmart's role.
Does ALEC have a media wing? Because many of these rhetorical assertions of xenophobia by conservatives, right-wingers, reactionaries, seem to be echoed in the corporate press, the broadcast networks, and wire services so many times. And there seems to be a synchrony between the hullabaloo and then the reactionary passage of laws. Do they work with media to subvert the public discussion?
Well, they definitely do have a PR shop. I think that it's more the case that because they provide sort of hands-on help to these legislators, getting them pieces of material produced by various think tanks that are connected to ALEC, as well as materials from these lobbyists and others that are talking points about these bills, they basically provide a way for state legislators, many of whom have only one person working for them, many of whom are part-time and don't have a lot of office money to hire staff. They basically end up staffing these legislators. And as a consequence, I think that the people who are often covered in the media about bills are those lawmakers that are closely connected to ALEC, that are aided and educated, in essence, by ALEC. And I think, you know, in terms of the question of xenophobia and fear, there's no doubt that Russell Pierce's statements, for example, in Arizona speak for themselves in terms of his extremism. In terms of some of the other legislators, I certainly don't know what's in their heart or what's in their mind, but I do know that as we have helped document, some of these bills do bear very heavily on people of color, and we know that those individuals, the groups that often represent them, are not in the room. So the NAACP is not a member of ALEC. It's not in the room when these bills are debated and discussed in these closed-door task force meetings and pre-approved by ALEC corporations and ALEC legislators.
I am so happy that you could be with us with this revelation, this expose today on ALEC. We've been speaking with Lisa Graves, Executive Director and Editor-in-Chief of PR Watch. They're at prwatch.org. And Lisa, thank you for your remedial lobbying, and tell people how to follow you and learn more about all of this.
Well, I would say lobbying in the little L sense, just in terms of letting people know what's happening with ALEC and what they've been up to. But folks who are interested, please do come to our site. We're at prwatch.org. That's P as in Paul, rwatch.org. And you can also check out the bills and read them with your own eyes on alecexposed.org. We have resources there so you can find out who the legislators are in your state who are going on these fancy trips funded by ALEC corporations, as well as information and links to who the corporations are that are basically selling you out by supporting and underwriting and bankrolling ALEC's agenda.
Well, thank you so much, Lisa Graves of PRWatch.org, for sharing with us today this dreadful epiphany.
Thank you for having us on.
This is 5 O'Clock Shadow on the Pacific Radio Network. We thank our guests today, Lisa Graves of PRWatch.org and Jackie Lewis of the Middle Collegiate Church, as well as the music we heard devoted to Trayvon Martin by God's Will and by Mile Long Boys. Also, Bob Dylan's thesis on the death of Emmett Till. I'd like to give thanks to Thiago Brozo for production today and Michael G. Haskins for engineering. If you have tips, leaks, comments, queries, or suggestions, send us an email to theshadow@wbai.org. And for 5 o'clock Shadow, I'm Robert Knight in New York.
This is your WBAI Community Bulletin Board with announcements of upcoming events. I'm Earth Mom. On March 27th and 28th, the Huntington Cinema Arts Center presents the Women's International Film Festival with screenings, panel discussions, and receptions for the following two films: The Last Fix, An Addict's Passage from Hell to Hope, starting at 6 p.m. on March 27th. And on March 28th at 7:30 p.m., the documentary Pink Ribbons, Inc. at 7:30 p.m. The Cinema Arts Center is located at 423 Park Avenue in Huntington, Long Island. For more information, go to cinemaartscenter.org.